Again, thank you for your patience and sorry for the delay. Let's see, we have Mr. Bender, who I believe is arguing for appellant. If you are ready, you may begin.
May it please the court. My name is Andrew Bender, and I'm here on behalf of the appellants in this matter, Linda and Richard Syme. During my time before the court, I will explain why this court should reverse the trial court's judgment and remand for a new trial on the merits for two reasons. First, the Symes' claims are not time barred by the statute of limitations. And second, a genuine issue of material fact exists with respect to each claim alleged in the Symes' live petition, with the exception of fraud, civil conspiracy, and exemplary damages, which we're not challenging on appeal. Your Honors, we're here today to ask this court to right a wrong. The Symes bought a homeowner's insurance policy, and in August 2013, a wind and hail storm tore through Tarrant County and caused damage to the Symes' home. When they turned to Allstate for help, Allstate was nowhere to be found. Rather than accepting Allstate's arguments and affirming the trial court's judgment based on technical failures and allegedly implicit rulings, this court should give the Symes their day in court. Which brings me to my first point. The Symes' claims are not time barred by the statute of limitations. In section 16.068 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code, it provides if a filed pleading relates to a cause of action that is not subject to a plea of limitation when the pleading is filed, a subsequent amendment to the pleading that changes the facts or grounds of liability is not subject to a plea of limitation unless the amendment is wholly based on a new, distinct, or different transaction or occurrence. The Texas Supreme Court interpreted this particular statute in American Petrofina Incorporated.
But didn't American Petrofina involve the omission of a party, not the omission of a claim?
Yes, Your Honor. And the ninth.
So does, in the pleadings at issue here, the pleadings were based on a different incident, that being an entirely different date of an alleged loss.
No, Your Honor, it wasn't in a
storm.
That's correct, Your Honor. It was a different storm than the claims that were filed in the Symes' first and second amended petitions. However, if you look to the first original petition, as can be seen on page 7 to 18 of the record, you'll find that the language used to assert a claim based on the August 2013 storm is nearly identical to the language used to assert a claim based on that same storm in the Symes' third amended petition. And in American Petrofina, the court recognized that without a showing of prejudice and assuming that the cause or the party relates back to the original filing, then that's enough to fall within the scope of Section 16.068. And as Your Honor mentioned, that case did deal with parties and not claims. But the Ninth Court of Appeals extended that exact same reasoning in Hendricks versus Thornton and applied the exact same reasoning from American Petrofina to a claim that was included in the original petition, omitted from the fourth amended petition, but included again in the fifth amended petition, which is exactly what we have here. Now, Allstate relies on a case from this court called Clary Corporation versus Smith, but as our briefing mentions, the 14th Court of Appeals in Hunnic versus Seafarers International Union adequately distinguishes why Clary would not apply in this particular circumstance. In Clary, the two defendants asserted counterclaims that exceeded the district court's jurisdiction. The amount of damages that were sought exceeded the jurisdiction of the court. So when the court dismissed their counterclaims, the defendants refiled in a new, entirely new case, new cause number, those exact same claims. So when the plaintiff ended up moving for summary judgment and the trial court granted it, this court decided that it was a new cause of action, it was a new lawsuit, and that it was barred by the statute of limitations. That's nothing like what we have here. As the court explained in Hunnic, This case is a situation where a claim was omitted from the petition and then re-included. This isn't a situation where we filed an entirely new lawsuit. And that's a material difference that leads to a different conclusion. Turning to the second reason why this court should reverse the trial court's judgment, there is a genuine issue of material fact with respect to each claim alleged in the Symes' third amended petition. Allstate argued at the trial court level that summary judgment was proper on the Symes' breach of contract and bad faith claims, and the trial court accepted that argument, granting summary judgment in favor of Allstate. The problem is that the denial letter of the Symes claim was sent on September 10th, 2013, while the inspection that inspected the damage to the Symes home took place on September 11th. Now, of course, we're taking all of the summary judgment evidence as true, and we're indulging all reasonable inferences in our favor. Allstate argues that the inspection actually took place on the 10th and not the 11th. But Allstate's own records demonstrate that the inspection took place on the 11th. That alone should be enough to deny summary judgment with respect to the breach of contract claim and the bad faith claims.
What summary judgment evidence is there that the August 13th loss occurred within the covered policy period?
The evidence that would support that conclusion, Your Honor, would be found in Dr. Hall's expert report that recognizes when the damage was sustained to the Symes home. And as far as I'm aware, I don't think that that's in dispute. I'm not sure, but I'll let Allstate address that. But it's my understanding that they filed their claim within a month after the loss occurred, and it was well within the policy period. It's my understanding that that's not in dispute, but I guess I'll let them speak
to that. Well, because I noticed that the report is not verified.
Your Honor, I believe it qualifies as a verified report because it is there is an affidavit. It's a weird electronic signature.
And I've looked at that affidavit as well, and it looks like it references the documents, but it references the reports, but it does not swear that any of the information in the reports is true or correct.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. As can be seen on page 1245, there is a signature that's, I would think, is an electronic signature. I'm not sure. It's several symbols and some letters.
Several question marks.
Yes, and some question marks, a few symbols. But I think what's important is that in Dr. Hall's report, he mentions that the damage that was caused to the Symes home was related solely to the August 13th storm. Now, in turning back to the inspection, when the inspection took place and when the denial letter was sent, I can't say what Allstate will argue or what it won't argue, but I can't imagine that Allstate will take a position that sending a denial letter the day before the inspection took place falls within any definition of the term reasonable. And without a reasonable basis for denial, summary judgment on the Symes' bad faith claims would be improper. The Supreme Court told us that in Viles versus National Security Insurance Company, where the insurer denied a claim and then at trial tried to rely on an event that postdated the denial to justify a reasonable basis for its denial. And the Supreme Court told us that to rely on an event that postdates the actual denial would defy logic. It can't be used to support the reasonableness of the denial. And it's for these reasons, Your Honors, that we request for this court to reverse the trial court's judgment and remand for a trial on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. Mr. Howie.
May it please the court. There are a number of problems with the Symes' pleadings and their attempts to submit summary judgment evidence, and I'm going to address some of those in a little bit, but I think it's important to note that even leaving aside the limitations issue, leaving aside the Symes' failure to timely submit summary judgment evidence, and leaving aside their failure to not only obtain leave of court, but even to seek leave of court to late file summary judgment evidence, summary judgment would still be proper, because even if it was the summary judgment evidence had been timely filed or they had sought leave to file that evidence, it is still not competent summary judgment evidence. In addition, a plaintiff can recover under an insurance policy only for a covered loss. When a covered event and a non-covered event both contribute to a loss, it's the plaintiff's burden to present evidence that where a fact finder could allocate the damage between the covered loss and the non-covered loss. The Symes present no summary judgment evidence allowing that allocation. Nevertheless, the trial court did properly grant Allstate summary judgment because their claims are barred by limitations. The Symes did not timely file summary judgment evidence or obtain leave of court or even seek leave of court.
But what about the fact that the trial court summary judgment order indicates that he considered all responses?
That's correct. It does say it considered all responses, but the order also says that the court considered the competent summary judgment evidence, and late filed summary judgment evidence is not competent summary judgment evidence. And in fact, this court's opinion in Frazier versus you says that if the trial court grants a no evidence motion for summary judgment and also states in the order that it considered the competent summary judgment evidence, that the combination of those two is an implicitly sustains objections to that summary judgment evidence. So in fact, not only did the court explicitly say that it considered just the competent summary judgment evidence, but based on its granting of the no evidence summary judgments and the language of the order, it implicitly sustained Allstate's objections to the summary judgment evidence, and hasn't even been challenged on appeal. Getting to the issue of limitations, under Texas law, when you add a claim, it will relate back if it arises out of the same transaction or occurrence. When you drop a claim and later attempt to refile it, that is a voluntary dismissal, and it does not relate back. The Symes don't dispute that the August 2013 storm, when they attempted to refile, that was after the limitations period had run. They argue, again relying on American Petrofina, that their claim was not voluntarily dismissed, but inadvertently omitted. American Petrofina does not apply for two reasons. First, the Symes' new claims did not involve the same transaction or occurrence as their existing claims. And number two, the claims were not inadvertently omitted, they were voluntarily dismissed. Now, first of all, American Petrofina involved a plaintiff who was named in a first, a second, and a third amended petition, omitted from a fourth amended petition, and then added back 37 days later in the fifth amended petition. The court held that the omission of the plaintiff appeared to be inadvertent and said that the claims against the omitted plaintiff's claims were not time barred because they related back, quote, consistent with Civil Practice and Remedies Code 16.068. And that's important because when they say consistent with 16.068, they mean it's from the same transaction or occurrence, because that's what that statute stands for. Same thing with the Hendricks case at the Symes site. In that case, it involved a federal securities claim that was omitted from a fourth amended petition and then repled in a fifth amended petition. There, the court, citing American Petrofina, said that the claim was not time-barred because, to quote, it relates back to the same transaction or occurrence as the previous timely filed claims. Unlike American Petrofina, unlike Hendricks, the Symes' claims do not involve the same transaction or occurrence. Their prior claims involved the April 2007, the April 2008, and the May 2012 storm. The new claims involve the August 2013 storm. So separate transaction occurrence, American Petrofina simply doesn't apply. Second, even if American Petrofina could be extended to claims involving separate transactions and occurrences, the Symes' claims were voluntarily dismissed. They were not inadvertently omitted. And I think if you compare American Petrofina to the facts of this case, you can see that. American Petrofina involved hundreds of plaintiffs, dozens of defendants, and there was one plaintiff who was omitted and then re-added 37 days later. In this case involves, the Symes' case, this case involves two plaintiffs, Mr. and Mrs. Symes. They waited 18 months till the third amended petition to add those claims back in. And if you look at their pleadings, their original petition identifies their claims regarding the August 2013 storm specifically by the specific storm event. And the specific claim, the specific insurance decision by Allstate. The first amended petition, they dropped the claims regarding the 2013 storm, and they add claims regarding the April 2008, the first amended petition, they add the claims regarding the April 2007 storm. And again, they identify the storm specifically by date. They even include specific claim number of what they're suing over. Same thing with the second amended petition when they add in the additional April 2008 and August and May 2012 storms. It's the same thing. Specific claims based by specific storms, specific claim numbers. They didn't, and then when they try to re-add in the 2013 claims, again, 18 months later, only after Allstate had filed for summary judgment on these other claims.
And is it true that last one was the third amended petition?
Yes, Your Honor. That's when they try to add in back in the August 2013 claims. Regarding the summary judgment evidence, the Symes don't dispute that the summary judgment evidence was not timely filed. They don't dispute that they never even sought leave to late file. They make three arguments. They say they didn't get 21 days notice at the summary judgment hearing, that the late filing was a result of a technical failure, and that the trial court nevertheless considered the evidence. Number one, 21 days notice. This was a reset hearing. You're not entitled to an additional 21 days notice. Even if you were, they never objected to it, showed up and argued, so they waived any objection to untimely notice, even if they were entitled to additional notice. Number two, this technical failure argument. They present no evidence of the nature of this technical failure, no evidence of what they intended to file when they initially filed their summary judgment. The attestation that they submit says that the filing was rejected because of a formatting error under Rule 21F8, not a technical failure under 21F6. But even leaving that aside, under Rule 166A, to late file summary judgment evidence, you have to get leave of court. Now, if there's a technical failure and under Rule 21, they may be entitled to appropriate relief, that may be the case. But what it's that saying is, yeah, you may be entitled to appropriate relief, but you still have to ask for leave of court to late file. You may be entitled to it, but under Rule 166A, you clearly have to ask for it. You can't just file.
Mr. Howe, I understand what you're saying, but don't you think that it's kind of a gotcha position that Allstate is taking? And if so or if not, is it unjust?
Your Honor, I don't think it's a gotcha situation. And I'll get to some of the other problems with the summary judgment evidence as well. But they make the argument that, well, Allstate, you got the summary judgment evidence anyway, so why are you complaining about it? That's not really accurate. We did receive some summary judgment evidence. We received the affidavit from the Symes' trial counsel. We received, I think, some of the deposition testimony. We did not receive Mr. Hall's affidavit. We did not receive this supplemental report of his that they rely upon. So we didn't receive that. And again, the rules are, if you want to late file summary judgment evidence, you have to ask at least get the court's permission to do that. You can't just file it without even seeking leave of court.
But wasn't the summary judgment evidence attached to the responses?
Well, that's what I'm not sure, Your Honor. What we received when they initially filed the summary judgment, we received some of the summary judgment evidence. Like I said, I think some deposition testimony, affidavit from their trial counsel. The evidence that they rely upon, Mr. Hall's affidavit, Mr. Hall's report, we did not receive. And again, they didn't prove up even in the record of what was attached to it when they initially tried to file it. But even if the evidence had been timely filed, or even if they had sought leave of court, it's still not competent summary judgment evidence. Mr. Hall's affidavit, all he says in his affidavit was that he was retained by the Symes and that he issued an initial and a supplemental report. It wasn't even properly notarized until the second or third time they tried to file it. The reports were not attached to the affidavit. The reports were not verified in the affidavit. The statements in the reports were not affirmed or sworn to or adopted in the affidavit. The affidavit does not establish that Mr. Hall is qualified or that his opinions are reliable or admissible. And even on the substance, Mr. Hall's supplemental report conflicts with his initial report. His initial report says, clearly, some of the damage described by Mrs. Syme occurred prior to the August 13, 2013 date of loss. And that's consistent with their pleadings, where they repeatedly, in their first and second amended petition, said that they suffered damage from these previous storms and that that damage had not been repaired, which had caused them additional damage. And so in the supplemental report, when he says, oh, it's from the 2013 storm, well, that's totally contradicted by what he said in his initial report. And because of that contradiction, that is not competent expert testimony for a summary judgment. Finally, on the substance of the claims, there's no genuine issue of material fact on either the breach of contract claims or the bad faith claims. For breach of contract, there's been no evidence of a covered loss. And most importantly, what I addressed earlier, no evidence of an allocation, which they're required to do, of how you allocate the damage between what was caused by the 2013 storm versus what was caused by the 2007.
But are they required to do that to avoid summary judgment?
They are, Your Honor. Yes, it's the doctrine of concurrent causation or concurrent causes, where a covered event and a non-covered event combined to cause a loss, the burden is on the insured to prove what damage was caused by the covered loss versus what was not, or to present some evidence where a fact finder can make that allocation.
Okay. Did you object to the failure of the report to be verified or the affidavit to properly verify the report?
We did, Your Honor. In fact, we object. We submitted initial objections when they refiled or filed additional stuff the day of the hearing. We filed supplemental objections. When they later tried to file additional stuff, we filed objections to that as well. We filed three objections. And finally, on the bad faith claim, I want to point out, you don't even get to a bad faith claim until you establish a breach of contract. Now, they've dug through the file and found where there's this one document that we don't even know who the author is that had a date of the inspection that was inaccurate. And their own pleadings say that the inspection was on September 10th. Our investigator or inspector said it was on the 10th. They found this document that, again, we don't even know who the author is, but it was just in the claim file that says the inspection was a day later. But you don't even get to that bad faith issue until you establish a breach of contract, which, again, they can't do. In conclusion, the trial court properly granted Allstate's traditional and no evidence motion for summary judgment. The claims are barred by limitations. The Symes presented no competent summary judgment evidence, there's no genuine issue of material fact as to any of the Symes' claims. Therefore, we would respectfully request that the trial court's judgment in favor of the Allstate defendants be affirmed in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Howie. Mr. Bender.
May it please the court. Several quick points on rebuttal, Your Honors. Opposing counsel relies on Frazier versus you to support the notion that implicit rulings were sustained. First, that holding has been disagreed with by the 1st, 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th district courts of appeals. And for example, the Texarkana Court of Appeals in Doan versus Christus Health, Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, in 2010, recognized that Oppoli argued that the affidavit should not be considered for any purpose because it was not timely submitted and was hearsay, but then recognized that the objections were not expressly ruled upon in the record and were therefore waived under Texas Rule of Appellate Procedure 33.1. And then more recently, out of Tyler in American Idol General LP versus Pither Plumbing, the Tyler Court of Appeals in 2015 recognized that in rejecting the holding of Frazier, the court said that the trial court's order granting summary judgment states that the trial court considered appellant's response to Pither's motion for summary judgment, and appellant's response relied in part on Hansen's affidavit, and then the court went on to consider Hansen's affidavit. Next, opposing counsel says that the claims were voluntarily dismissed, but as can be seen on the record on page 640 to 641, there's an affidavit on file saying they were, in fact, inadvertently omitted. Opposing counsel also claims that we shouldn't look to Rule 21 for guidance in terms of whether this evidence is timely or whether it should even be considered. Opposing counsel also mentions the fact that it was not included due to a formatting error, and Rule 21H expressly provides that the clerk has no right to not file a document due to a formatting error, yet that's exactly what happened in this case. And to make matters worse, the response was actually accepted. If you look to page 892 to 912 of the record, you'll see a timestamp that shows that this response was accepted. So the Symes had every reason to believe that the response with the exhibits attached were accepted as well. And it wasn't until the hearing date on December 17th that the Symes actually learned that the evidence wasn't attached, and then they filed it within 54 minutes later. So it's our position that that's a reasonable amount of time as a matter of law. That's due diligence as a matter of law. Next, opposing counsel said it may be the case, but of course 21F6 says the filing party must be given a reasonable extension of time, which is not discretionary. It leaves no discretion to the trial court. The Texas Supreme Court expressly removed that discretion, and in doing so, it recognized that it will be an imperfect system, implementing this e-filing in a mandatory fashion across the state of Texas. And the way the Supreme Court of Texas sought to deal with that was to build a safety valve into this particular section. And that safety valve is Rule 21F6. Lastly, to Your Honor's question, this is a gotcha. This is exactly what that is. It is unjust, and it's contrary to the Texas rules of civil procedure that are supposed to obtain a just and equitable result by relying on substantive principles of law. The Symes were denied their day in court. They never had a chance to prove to a fact finder, to a jury of their peers, that they're entitled to recover for Allstate's wrongful denial of their claim. And then lastly, Allstate's counsel says that the September 11th inspection date is inaccurate. And of course, this was resolved on summary judgment, and it's our position that that's a conclusion that needs to be made by the fact finder, not by opposing counsel. And it's for these reasons we respectfully request this court to reverse the trial court's grant of summary judgment and remand for a new trial on the merits.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Mr. Bender and Mr. Howie. We appreciate counsel's briefing and your arguments today. We appreciate you being here as well. Your case is submitted. And that concludes our cases for argument today. Thank you for our visitors coming today as well. We appreciate y'all being here. We will now adjourn court.
All right. The Honorable Court of Appeals from the Second District of Texas now stands adjourned.